Like an uncoiling serpent, a line of fighting chariots wound swiftly down the gut of the valley. From where he clung to the dashboard of the leading chariot, the boy looked up at the cliffs that hemmed them in. The sheer rock was pierced by the openings of the tombs of the old people that honeycombed the cliff. The dark pits stared down at him like the implacable eyes of a legion of djinn. Prince Nefamemnon shuddered and looked away, furtively making the sign to avert evil with his left hand. Over his shoulder, he glanced back down the column and saw that from the following chariot, Taita was watching him through the swirling clouds of dust. The dust had coated the old man and his vehicle with a pale film, and a single shaft of sunlight that penetrated to the depths of this deep valley glittered on the mica particles, so that he seemed to glow like the incarnation of one of the gods. Nefer ducked his head guiltily, ashamed that the old man had witnessed his fleeting superstitious dread. No royal prince of the house of Tamosa should show such weakness, not now that he stood at the gateway to manhood. But then Taita knew him as no other did, for he had been Nefer's tutor since infancy, closer to him than his own parents or siblings. Taita's expression never changed, but even at that distance his ancient eyes seemed to bore into the core of Nefer's being, seeing all, understanding all. Nefer turned back and drew himself up to his full height beside his father, who flipped the reins and urged the horses on with a crack of the long whip. Ahead of them, the valley opened abruptly into the great amphitheatre that contained the stark and tumbled ruins of the city of Galala. Nefer thrilled to his first sight of this famous battlefield. As a young man, Taita himself had fought on this site, when the demigod Tanus, Lord Harab, had destroyed the dark forces that were threatening this very Egypt. That had been over 60 years ago, but Taita had related to him every detail of the fight, and so vivid was his storytelling that Nefer felt as if he'd been there on that fateful day. Nefer's father, the god and pharaoh Tamosa, wheeled the chariot up to the tumbled stones of the ruined gateway and reined in the horses. Behind him, 100 chariots in succession neatly executed the same manoeuvre, and the charioteers swarmed down from the footplates to begin watering the horses. When Pharaoh opened his mouth to speak, the coated dust crumbled from his cheeks and dribbled down his chest. "My lord!" Pharaoh hailed the great lion of Egypt, Lord Naja, his army commander and beloved companion. "We must be away again before the sun touches the hilltops. I wish to make a night run through the dunes to El Gabar." The blue war crown on Tamosa's head gleamed with mica dust, and his eyes were bloodshot with tiny lumps of tear-wet mud in the corners as he glanced down at Nefer. "This is where I'll leave you to go on with Taita." Although he knew it was futile to protest, Nefer opened his mouth to do so. The squadron was going in against the enemy. Pharaoh Tamosa's battle plan was to circle south through the great dunes and weave a way between the bitter Natron lakes to take the enemy in his rear and rip an opening in his centre through which the Egyptian legions, massed and waiting on the Nile bank before Abnub, could pour. Tamosa would combine the two forces, and before the enemy could rally, drive on past Tel Aldaba and seize the enemy citadel of Avaris. It was a bold and brilliant plan, which, if it succeeded, would bring to a close at one stroke the war with the Hyksos that had already raged through 2 lifetimes. Nefer had been taught that battle and glory were the reasons for his existence on this earth, but even at the advanced age of 14 years they had so far eluded him. He longed with all his soul to ride to victory and immortality at his father's side. Before his protest could pass his lips, Pharaoh forestalled him. "What is the first duty of a warrior?" he demanded of the boy. Nefer dropped his eyes. "It's obedience, Majesty," he replied softly, reluctantly.
"Never forget it." Pharaoh nodded and turned away.
Nefer felt himself spurned and discarded. His eyes smarted and his upper lip quivered. But Taita's gaze stiffened him. He blinked to clear his vision of tears, and took a pull from the waterskin that hung on the side rail of the chariot, before turning to the old Magus with a jaunty toss of his thick, dust-caked curls.
"Show me the monument, Tata," he commanded.
The ill-assorted pair made their way through the concourse of chariots, men and horses that choked the narrow street of the ruined city. Stripped naked in the heat, 20 troopers had climbed down the deep shafts to the ancient wells and formed a bucket chain to bring the sparse, bitter water to the surface. Once those wells had been bountiful enough to support a rich and populous city that sat full upon the trade route between the Nile and the Red Sea. Then, centuries ago, an earthquake had shattered the water-bearing stratum and blocked the subterranean flow. The city of Galala had died of thirst. Now there was scarcely sufficient water to slake the thirst of 200 horses and top up the water-skins before the wells were dry. Taita led Nefer through the narrow lanes, past temples and palaces, now inhabited only by the lizard and the scorpion, until they reached the deserted central square. In its centre stood the monument to Lord Tarnus and his triumph over the armies of bandits who had almost choked the life out of the richest and most powerful nation on earth. The monument was a bizarre pyramid of human skulls, cemented together and protected by a shrine made of red block slabs. 1,000 and more skulls grinned down on the boy as he read aloud the inscription on the stone portico. "Our severed heads bear witness to the battle at this place in which we died beneath the sword of Tarnus, Lord Harab. May all the generations that follow learn from that mighty lord's deeds the glory of the gods and the power of righteous men. Thus decreed in the 14th year of the reign of the god Pharaoh Mamosa." Squatting in the monument's shadow, Taita watched the prince as he walked round the monument, pausing every few paces, with hands on hips, to study it from every angle. Although Taita's expression was remote, his eyes were fond. His love for the lad had its origin in two other lives. The first of these was Lostris, Queen of Egypt. Taita was a eunuch, but he'd been gelded after puberty and had once loved a woman. Because of his physical mutilation, Taita's love was pure, and he'd lavished it all on Queen Lostris, Nefer's grandmother. It was a love so encompassing that even now, 20 years after her death, it stood at the centre of his existence. The other person from whom his love for Nefer sprang was Tarnus, Lord Harab, to whom this monument had been erected. He had been dearer than a brother to Taita. They were both gone now, Lostris and Tarnus, but their blood mingled strongly in this child's veins. From their illicit union so long ago had sprung the child who had grown up to become the Pharaoh Tamosa, who now led the squadron of chariot that had brought them here, the father of Prince Nefer.
"Taita, show me where it was that you captured the leader of the robber barons."
Nefer's voice cracked with excitement and the onset of puberty.
"Was it here?"
He ran to the broken-down wall at the south side of the square.
"Tell me the story again."
"No, it was here, this side." Taita told him, stood up, and strode on those long, stalk-thin legs to the eastern wall. He looked up to the crumbling summit. The ruffian's name was Shufti, and he was one-eyed and as ugly as the god Seth. He was trying to escape from the battle by climbing over the wall up there. Taita stooped and picked up half a baked mud brick from the rubble, and suddenly hurled it upwards. It sailed over the top of the high wall. "I cracked his skull and brought him down with a single throw." Even though Nefer knew at first hand the old man's strength and that his powers of endurance were legend, he was astonished by that throw.
"He's as old as the mountains, older than my grandmother, for he nursed her as he'd done me," Nefer marvelled.
Men say that he's witnessed 200 inundations of the Nile, and that he built the pyramids with his own hands. Then aloud he said, "Did you hack off his head, Tata, and place it on that pile there?" He pointed at the grisly monument. "You know the story well enough. I've told it to you 100 times." Tata feigned modest reluctance to extol his own deeds. "Tell me again," Nefer ordered. Tata sat down on a stone block while Nefer settled at his feet in happy anticipation and listened avidly until the ram's horns of the squadron sounded the recall with a blast that shattered into diminishing echoes along the black cliffs. "Pharaoh summons us," Tata said, and stood up to lead the way back through the gate. There was a great bustle and scurry outside the walls as the squadron made ready to go into the dune lands. The waterskins were bulging again, and the troopers were checking and tightening the harness of their teams before mounting up. Pharaoh Tamosa looked over the heads of his staff as the pair came through the gateway, and summoned Taita to his side with an inclination of his head. Together they walked out of earshot of the squadron officers. Lord Narger made as if to join them. Taita whispered a word to Pharaoh, then Tamosa turned and sent Narger back with a curt word. The injured lord, flushed with mortification, shot a look at Taita that was fierce and sharp as a war arrow.
"You've offended Narger. Some day I might not be at hand to protect you," Pharaoh warned.
"We dare trust no man," Taita demurred. "Not until we crush the head of the serpent of treachery that tightens its coils around the pillars of your palace. Until you return from this campaign in the north, only the two of us must know where I'm taking the prince."
"But Narger," Pharaoh laughed dismissively. Narger was like a brother. They'd run the Red Road together.
"Even Narger." Taita said no more. His suspicions were at last hardening into certainty, but he'd not yet gathered all the evidence he'd need to convince Pharaoh.
"Does the prince know why you're going into the fastness of the desert?" Pharaoh asked.
"He knows only that we're going to further his instruction in the mysteries and to capture his god-bird."
"Good, Taita," Pharaoh nodded. "You were never secretive, but true. There's nothing more to say, for we've said it all. Go now, and may Horus spread his wings over you and Nefer.
Look to your own back, Majesty, for in these days enemies are standing behind you as well as at your front."
Pharaoh grasped the Magus's upper arm and squeezed hard. Under his fingers the arm was thin but hard as a dry acacia branch. Then he went back to where Nefer waited beside the wheel of the royal chariot, with the injured air of a puppy ordered back to its kennel.
"Divine Majesty, there are younger men than me in the squadron."
The prince made one last despairing effort to persuade his father that he should ride with the chariots. Pharaoh knew that the boy was right, of course. Meron, the grandson of the illustrious General Kratos, was his junior by 3 days, and today was riding with his father as lance-bearer in one of the rear chariots.
"When will you allow me to ride into battle with you, father?"
"Perhaps when you've run the Red Road. Then not even I will gainsay you."
It was a hollow promise, and they both knew it. Running the Red Road was the onerous test of horsemanship and weapons that few warriors attempted. It was an ordeal that drained, exhausted, and often killed even a strong man in his prime and trained to near perfection. Nefer was a long way from that day. Then Pharaoh's forbidding expression softened, and he gripped his son's arm in the only show of affection he would allow himself before his troops.
"Now it is my command that you go with Taita into the desert to capture your godbird, and thus to prove your royal blood and your right one day to wear the double crown."